This is F1 Debrief episode 92, Fit to Race. Coming up in today's show, we travel to Silverstone, learn about food and throw some balls. Hello. So here we are again.
Where is everybody?
This is not your normal debrief.
I don't see anybody in the comments. I don't see anybody following us. There's no camera on you.
We're not live.
What's going on?
We haven't done this for ages.
Since forever.
Yeah.
And ever and ever, ever.
It's a bit weird. I'm just talking to you. I'm not sure I like it.
Just the two of us?
Yeah.
Just like old times. Why are we not doing a live show?
Well, because last week we went to Silverstone,
yep.
Which we alluded to on the blog, and we want to tell you all about it, but our weekend is structured so that this is the only time we've got.
So we're going to do a show offline,
yep.
And then publish it on Sunday,
yep.
Without anybody being around.
I know, we're a bit sneaky.
Who's
like that?
Who's going to correct us when we get all our facts wrong? Side
pod tour. You know, the off-season, there just isn't enough news to keep us going, is there?
Okay, so we are now creating our own news?
Well, yeah, what we do is we're always on the lookout for interesting things to do and talk about, or unusual things to do and talk about, especially now we've got our own jingle for Side Pod Tour.
Right.
It means we have to go places.
We did say we'd be doing a lot of touring during the off-season, so we might as well get out there and do something. So, Silverstone.
Yes.
That's where we went.
We went to the Porsche Human Performance Centre.
Not been there in winter before.
What, to Silverstone?
Freezing cold.
It was a little bit icy, a little bit treacherous,
yep.
Quite scary. There were cars going around the track.
They were brave.
I don't know how they managed that.
They must have been freezing cold. They were open top cars as well, single seat racers. Must have been absolutely freezing in there.
The people at the Human Performance Centre were having a special event, which we found out about from Twitter.
Yes, Mike Garth, who was one of the speakers at the Porsche Centre. He tweeted it. He said he's going to be there and it's going to be F1 related. I heard about it and I spoke to him and said, what's going on? Is it the kind of thing we should be looking into? Would it be good content for our podcast? He said, more than likely, come along.
So now our schedule revolves around what we find on Twitter.
Exactly. If anybody else is up to stuff, let us know. Maybe we'll come visit you too.
The basic idea of the day was for the Porsche team to sell what they do, introduce drivers to the kind of things they do there, which is... they train, coach, tell drivers what they should eat,
right.
How much exercise they should do.
It's kind of an open day, like before you go from little school to big school.
Yeah.
You have a look around and you see what facilities they have and is it the kind of thing you might be interested in, but at a cut price. Because we only paid £35 each, and normally, if a driver was going to do this full on, what would they pay?
Well, these are top people. So to work with them costs a fortune. You can get one-to-one training, assessments, coaching, and a monthly session with them for £4,000 a year.
Right. It's professional.
£4,000.
Yeah. £35 was a bargain.
Absolutely.
By comparison. Anything else they do?
They do more group-orientated stuff, which is cheaper, but it's still £100 a month.
Wow. Okay.
Definitely not aimed at us.
What does the group thing involve? Because that's almost doable.
Well, I think you get weekly training sessions as a group, and you get an online fitness diary. And
that's targeted at younger drivers.
Yeah, so young people that want to learn how to get better at what they do.
And the 4,000 mark is for Formula One drivers.
Well, you'd imagine that someone that's just karting can't really afford that. Like I said, I think it's just top people that work at the Porsche Centre. And actually, I think there's only three people that work there in that big building.
Right. It's a very large building. We should say that inside it, there are a number of cars in the main foyer. And we'll put pictures on the Enhanced podcast for you to look at. It's a huge dome, and it's situated on the far side of the Silverstone circuit. So you get to it via an access road near the main gate.
You have to go all the way around. It was great fun.
You do. And I think we mentioned it in the Silverstone podcast because it was a gigantic silver building. It really stood out and it was new. And I think they opened it on the weekend of the Silverstone Grand Prix.
Yes, and now we're slightly concerned. They might be upset that obviously the Grand Prix has been taken away.
Yes, if it gets taken away for good... which is not necessarily given, but if it does, it may hurt them a little bit.
It's not the end of the world because there still seems to be plenty of track days and things going on there.
Well, it was a busy day when we were there.
Yeah.
So Silverstone will be fine.
Anyway, the three people that work there, there's Andy, who worked as a sports scientist for Benetton and Renault. So he's trained Alonso, Button, Webber, Trulli.
Big names.
Great stuff. Elliot does a lot of coaching for endurance events, and he's worked with lots of racing drivers. He is an expert at Ironman, and I think he's done the Taj Challenge with Webber as well.
Ironman, that's heavy, heavy going.
I think he's
going.
Like one of the only people in the whole world that's done it under 9 hours or something.
9 hours? That's the running, the kayaking, and then the cycling.
Trying to kill yourself?
In a different order. That I think it might
be. I think that's what it's called.
It's for nutcases only.
And there's Pippa. She does like the assessments and works out nutrition and training programs and things. Apparently, she was a high-level rower.
We're kind of out of our depth amongst these people.
These are top athletes.
We're mostly pen pushers. We spend a lot of time on the internet. Not really. We don't normally mix with this sort of...
Well, I don't think it was aimed at us, obviously, no. But I'm not really sure who it was aimed at, because there were some young drivers there. Mm-hmm. There were some older drivers there, people looking just to get into it for fun.
Yep.
There was a guy there who trained drivers, yep. So like a coach.
He was looking into it. There was Tim Harvey from British Touring Car. At first, we weren't sure. We knew we recognised him from somewhere, but weren't entirely sure.
What, is he a commentator?
He's a commentator for BTCC. I have no idea what he was doing there either.
In the morning, when we first got there, they split us all into groups. We got to wear a little yellow band. We were in the yellow group.
Okay.
They had several sections of things to cover. So there were a few groups and we were all rotating round, looking at the different things.
This is all the services that the Human Performance Centre provides. So they cover so many different activities and so many elements of race preparation that it's not just one section they concentrate on. So they split us into little groups and said, right, first you'll do X and then Y and then Z.
So the first one we went to was called MOT for the Human Body.
I need one of them.
Yeah. Okay, fair enough. Now the poor lady, her projector didn't work.
So they could do with an MOT for the IT department too.
Yeah. But that was basically an introduction to, you know, what you need to do to, I think she kept saying, what you need to do to have the edge.
Right. This is, if you're a racing driver, what you need to get the edge over your opponents.
And there was just a couple of things we picked up from that. There was a great quote. She said, being fit doesn't make you drive fast, but it makes you drive faster longer.
Interesting.
Which is important. That basically sums up everything that we did in the whole day.
Yes.
She said the week before a race event, so obviously this wasn't aimed at us.
Right.
But she said exercise lightly every day, get 2 days rest and store up your carbs.
It could be aimed at us if she was thinking of us live commenting.
Oh, that does take some energy.
It takes an awful lot of energy to keep up with every session for an entire weekend. So that, you know, I might take that advice on board.
2 to 3 days before, she said overhydrate. But she also said give a baby 4 pints of water a day, so I'm not sure we should listen to her on that.
A little bit dubious of her sources.
I think perhaps she wasn't quite sure of the amounts.
She's recommending we do overhydrate before live commenting. I mean racing.
The next session was called 10 Steps to a Healthy Diet.
So session two,
yep.
All about nutrition.
The talk was given by Barbara Cox, who is the top nutritionist from NutriChef.
Okay.
Their website is nutrichef.co.uk.
And what do they do for drivers?
Well, what they do for everyone is prepare meals in advance and deliver them to you.
So they manage your diet.
So they basically give you food to eat.
And it's not just for athletes. They also provide for bands and anybody on the road who's maybe not near or not able to prepare their own decent meals, that they will go out and they will provide whatever you need to survive, basically.
Yeah, I think they'll do it for anyone, assuming you'll pay for it.
But they do specialise in drivers and athletes and diets for people who basically consume and use a lot of energy.
You need to look after their bodies. Now, she introduced herself as a champion ice skater. Apparently, she was champion in Canada.
Okay.
And she was sponsored by Snickers.
Not good.
Well, apparently, she ate a lot of Snickers.
You would.
Yeah.
Especially if they were free.
Absolutely.
Snickers on tap.
And so she was quite successful, but then became a bit ill from all the sugar.
So since then, she started looking into what made her ill and how to make athletes' lives better by food.
Teach other people not to do what she does. Do you think perhaps she took her sponsorship too far?
I would certainly do the same, so I can criticise. But on the other hand, you don't see Kimmy chain smoking.
Apparently, nutrition improves mental clarity and concentration, and it stops you getting tired, sluggish and ill. So it's very important. And Barbara said that she tries to get people to eat 80 fruits and vegetables, 80 different types of fruits and vegetables a month. I didn't even know there were that many.
That's an amazing statistic. Wow, drivers must be the healthiest people on earth. One thing she did that I did take note of, she works to make sure that the energy doesn't get built up before the start of the race. So you don't start the race high on sugar when the lights go out and then suddenly find yourself flagging 5 or 6 laps in. She's working on basically making sure drivers have a balanced diet throughout the course of the race. And a lot of preparation and knowledge goes into that.
She'll probably kill me for giving away the 10 steps to a healthy diet, but I just wanted to share them with you.
Okay.
Basically, here goes. Drink plenty of water, eat fruit and veg, buy local produce, try a fish dish, cut down on dairy, cut down on sugar, cut down on saturated fats, avoid food additives, cut down on salt, and strive for an alkalizing diet. There is nothing you can actually eat.
That sounds like an awful lot of effort. Who knew being a driver was so difficult?
When we walked away from that lecture, I wasn't ever going to eat again.
I don't blame you. Me neither. Is there anything drivers can eat at all that may be, you know, slightly naughty?
Well, I'll tell you what. In the top 10 nutritional tips for athletes, number 7 says, if you think you'll find it hard being a nutritional saint, stick with the 80-20 rule. 80% very healthy and 20% healthy-ish. Banish rubbish like cream cakes to just once a year.
Once a year?
Yep.
One cream cake per year.
Yep.
I kind of think I live on the 20-80 rule. 20% is okay. The rest of it's rubbish.
The third session was called Mind Management, and this was Mike's session, so obviously it was our favourite.
It was his fault that we were there.
Exactly.
And was his session worth attending?
Actually, it was really, really good.
And the kind of things he talked about was measuring driver abilities.
Yeah, I mean, he's more in the sports psychology side of things.
Mm-hmm.
So coaching people to control how they drive.
Okay, so this is, we're now onto MOT for your mind.
Yes.
It's working out what aptitudes drivers have, what their strong points are and what their weak points are. Clearly driving fast must be a strong point.
Yep.
And so this is taking it to the next stage and analysing which areas of their mind are strong whilst they're in the car.
Yeah, well, he said, obviously there's not that many ways to measure your mind, but there's a massive questionnaire that they do, which compares you or whoever's taking it to a database of Olympic gold medalists, world champions.
Right. So they can compare an average driver, a young driver, maybe a Carter, against the world's top athletes and see from that how they stack up and what areas that they excel in and what areas need more improvement.
Absolutely. And we did a little snippet of it, just 6 questions of God knows how many there are in the real thing.
And how did we fare?
Well, not very well. I mean, the questions were about how you'll react to the pressures of being a racing driver, things like getting on with the team, how distractible you are, and your focus on the outside world and things.
And are you going to, from that little test, are you going to make a good racing driver?
Probably not.
No.
I was really, there were 3 bits we were measured on. I was really bad on one and middling on the other 2.
I had to middle in.
Yeah.
And that's about all. There was a guy there who did really well. And he was very calm.
He was
under
used
pressure.
As an example.
Yeah, and I think for a living, he broke major business deals and also did Tai Chi. So that's the kind of mindset you need to be in to be good at handling race cars under pressure.
He did look a bit like Andrew Sachs, though.
The guy who did well.
Yeah.
Maybe he was. I can't imagine he's much of a business wheeler dealer. But that's the kind of thing that this quiz or this test brought out. And it basically, from my point of view, I'm not good at thinking whilst driving. So I can drive and I can handle an apex and I can hit an apex, but I'm not aware of what's going on around me at the same time, and therefore I might miss every black flag going.
Well, Mike did mention that there was a driver and he could see from the questionnaire results that he wasn't very good, and then he went out and missed out black flags as they were being waved.
Yes.
He couldn't see them. He was too busy focused.
So the test proved that the guy was going to have problems, and almost immediately
he
had those problems.
Yes.
But it's good, because once you know you've got these issues, then you can start to work on them. It's finding out where your weaknesses are before you can improve them.
Another example was, I think one driver was asked to keep an eye on his rev counter and remember what speed it was coming out of the corner.
Right.
And he was so busy watching his rev counter that he actually missed the apex of the corner and messed it all up.
Okay, so that guy couldn't do 2 things at once. He's a bit like me.
Yeah.
He could make the corner, but he couldn't do anything whilst he was in that corner.
But Mike would be able to sort that out.
Right.
Tell you how to do it properly.
He could use his mind management skills to make that better and to help you increase your awareness and your abilities inside the racing car and outside the car.
I'll tell you what, talking of people that look like other people, I'm pretty sure that Mike is Dave Gorman.
Right. He's going to love you that.
Have you ever seen them in a room together at the same time?
I haven't, but I do like Dave Gorman. He's a personal hero of mine. And I, you're right. I think Mike, the way he just explains stories and the way he carries conversations is very similar. So that's not a criticism.
It was good. I liked it.
It's uncanny, actually.
I barely made any notes because I was too busy listening.
Yes, it was one of those. I mean, a lot of sessions you made notes in, and Mike's basically, we're doing it all from memory because it was that good. One of the funniest things happened in there. We were in class with Mike.
Class? Back at school?
Well, we were put in groups, and it was kind of like classes.
We stayed with them all day.
Yeah, we spent all day with them. And he was talking about being easily distracted. And just as he was, we were in a boardroom overlooking Hangar Strait, and a whole host of cars went screaming past. And I was so busy watching them head off down and on their way, I completely missed everything he said. And I just sort of tuned back into the conversation as he was talking about easily distracted people not listening to what's going on. I'm thinking, oh dear.
He said, if you're easily distracted, you're not going to make a good racing driver. But you were too distracted to hear that.
Yeah, I'm watching the racing cars. I'm definitely meant to be a spectator.
Anyway, we're going to try and get him on the show. He seemed quite keen to come and talk about it. And we've got to do that soon because he's on television.
Yes.
I think, is it April or May,
so.
Maybe?
He said it's going to be on terrestrial TV, and we can't say too much about it because I think it might be a little bit hush-hush. But once that's aired, he's going to be some kind of megastar.
Yeah.
So if he's free before he shoots for the stars, then maybe we'll get him on the show and he can talk more in depth about it because it's really interesting. He has so much information. He knows so much stuff.
And he's about really smart.
What guys are thinking. Yeah, and he's been involved in racing for so long. I saw on Twitter today he's working on a proposal for Red Bull Racing this week, and he's gone public with that, so I'm sure we can talk about it. So, I mean, he's involved in Formula One. He's right close to the people who matters. He works with carters, mostly with younger guys. He does work with more experienced hands, and I think he's worked with Red Bull in the past, and he's doing it again this year. So he's a man who knows a lot of stuff, and he's very interesting to listen to. And if we can get him on the show, I don't have any questions, but I could just listen for a couple of hours, and it would make a great show.
If you want to know more about what he does, you can find his website at sun1400.com.
That's sun1400.com.
If you don't have the time to trawl through website after website looking for Formula One news, let F1 Minute do the hard work for you. Delivered to your ears every weekday, F1 Minute is 60 seconds of headlines keeping you up to date with drivers, teams, rules, regulations, testing, races, launches, results, quotes, anything you can think of. Visit f1minute.com for all the details and to find the latest show. Our fourth session of the morning, and this one was called Strength and Conditioning, which was basically all about exercise and I didn't like it.
Running, jumping, throwing, catching.
Yeah.
Was mostly what it involved. They've got some pretty high-tech equipment there, and they've got a ball that's misshaped, which they bounce and you've got to
catch. They got us in a big circle, you know, and it was like those nightmares you have about being at school.
Right.
Everyone looking at you, and they were throwing the ball around, but it was knobbly.
Yeah.
The ball was all wonky, so it bounced any which way. I did manage to catch it, though.
I was well impressed.
I'm quite proud.
And good catch. Rubbish throw that followed it.
Yeah, well, the thing is, I threw it a bit hard and it bounced over someone's head, but I caught it. That's
you
all that matters.
You can catch, but you can't throw.
I did like, they had some machines there, so some stretching machines and things, but I did like what they were saying about the exercises you could do in your hotel room.
Right.
Because obviously, as a driver, you don't always carry around a whole gym with
you.
Okay,
not always convenient. And what do they have? They had bands, skipping ropes, things you can stretch.
A ball.
Hand grips.
Yeah.
Anything that you can do that you could stick in a suitcase. It wasn't too heavy. And you could do it anyway. You tie some bands to a pole and then basically pull yourself against it and things like that.
There was a cool hand grip test.
Yeah.
So it's this little machine and you squeeze it as hard as you can.
Yes.
And I think drivers were about 60 or 70.
Right.
Do you remember what yours was?
Was it in the 40s?
I think it was about 37.
Ah, not very strong then.
So what with that and your distractibility?
Right.
Not looking good, is it?
Is it any wonder I didn't do well at karting?
From strength and conditioning, that led nicely on into the lab.
Science and stuff.
Yeah, and there was a scary machine there.
Okay.
You know,
which one?
Well, you know, you can... I don't know, they're everywhere, really. You can put 50p in these machines, step on them, and they'll tell you your body mass index.
You'll find them at the gym.
Completely useless, because that's just height and weight, which tells you nothing.
Okay.
Well, this machine tells you too much.
Right.
I think it probably, you have to put in more than 50p.
Yes.
But you basically, you stand on it bare feet, you hold these things in your bare hands.
Yes.
And it can tell you everything about you.
I believe it's the most advanced, did they say it was the most advanced machine at the Porsche Center in the country?
It is, yeah.
So you stand on it barefoot. And you have the paddles in your hands. And from that, what can it tell you?
It can tell you everything. It can tell you all the different liquids you're made up. It can tell you how much of you is bone.
Right.
It can tell you how much of you is fat, which bits are good, which bits are bad.
And it does this. It doesn't scan you. It just basically takes your weight. And I have no idea how this works. It's literally magic.
She did say it sends like frequencies into you.
Oh, does it?
And the way they return tells you this stuff. But like you say, it is like leprechaun magic.
It's amazing. And like I said, I think it's the only one, it's the most advanced in the country. So they've got some pretty special equipment in this building. They had some other stuff in there, though.
Well, other special equipment, a Batak wall.
Yeah, we saw one of those at Honda.
Yeah.
Dreamfields, wasn't it? They had one of those. I didn't do very well on it there. But Jensen is one of the highest scorers on that machine. And I don't think anybody got close to it whilst we were there.
Well, we only saw a few people do it. Apparently, the record is like 120 or something in 60 seconds.
Most people were averaging 59 and 60. So some way off what Jensen can do with his arms.
They did say that, I mean, you can do the 60-second test.
Yeah.
leap about, hit the lights, make them go off. But also, you can use it as a warm-up and a cool-down, which is 5 minutes at a time.
Wow.
I'd get bored.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'd find it very exhausting.
Yeah.
It's really energetic, because obviously, the bathtub board, you have to Google it if you want more information, but I'm sure we've talked about it in the past. There's lights spread around like a big spider, and they come on at various intervals, and you have to use your peripheral vision to see where they are and get to them as quickly as you can before the next light comes on. Spatial awareness, I guess, is good for drivers. Not entirely sure what it works on, but Jensen swears by it, and Honda had one, and now the Porsche's in it's gone.
They did let a little child, I think it was the owner's son,
right,
maybe.
Could be.
He had a go, and he was not quite tall enough, so the lights at the top, he had to leap up there, which is some dedication for you, I reckon.
That's a lot of energy. He's going to grow up to be very fit.
Well, you would growing up in a place like that, wouldn't you?
Well, if your dad's an Ironman champion? Yeah, possibly. One of the machines they had in the room, which we didn't really get to see a proper demo of, is a reflex machine, which tests responses when the start lights go out and basically measures what your feet do on the accelerator and the brake. So geared 100% towards racers, really useful. I'd love to have seen that working, because that's obviously going to be really key for Formula One drivers who are looking and studying the start lights and where that extra millisecond really, really counts. And they're completely geared up to handle proper, you know, it's all driver training stuff they've got at this place.
I think some drivers could really benefit from some start line training. Well, then it was lunchtime and they were serving some very nice, healthy food, which they would have to. It would be very good if they served burgers and chips.
There was a distinct lack of chocolate.
Yeah. But I couldn't eat it. I was scarred from the NutriChef lady.
Well, yes, you were scarred from the earlier talk. And we were obviously sat at a table of four.
Yeah.
And there was two of us. Who should join us at our lunch table?
You went off to get your dinner and I was sat there drinking some of the water.
Thinking, I wonder how many calories this contains.
Yeah. And then the nice NutriChef lady,
Barbara,
came and sat with us.
Worst dinner guest ever. Lovely lady.
She's lovely.
She's really nice.
I'll tell you what I did like. Mostly, if you don't eat something at a set mealtime, people say, oh, aren't you having anything?
Mm.
The nutritionist didn't say that.
She's obviously used to people not eating.
Yeah, I liked it.
But I couldn't think of anyone possibly worse.
It's typical, isn't it?
Yeah. The person.
What was I meant to say if she did ask? But you scared me.
You scarred me for life. I'm never going to eat again.
She was really nice though. And actually, it was quite handy that she sat there, because we had intended to comment a little bit more. I think we just left a little teaser, didn't we?
We were going to comment live and update people as to our progress throughout the day.
Yeah, because we left a teaser that was like, we're at Silverstone. And then my signal completely disappeared. Yeah. I don't know what happened. It's like all the telephone signal in the whole world got sucked away.
However, Barbara, she had the Wi-Fi key.
She did. She went and got us the password.
Wonderful stuff. So we were then connected again. So thank you for that.
We didn't actually say that much more. We thought it was quite fun just to leave people hanging.
Speculating.
After lunch, it was all about Mark Webber.
Oh, yeah. He turned up.
Now, it was thought that he might be there, but it wasn't confirmed.
Mm.
So he's not the reason that we went.
No. Well, I think it depended on how his leg was and what he was doing. And originally, when I first heard about it from Mike, I think it was speculative that there might be an F1 driver present, but it wasn't confirmed.
It seems like out of all the F1 drivers, it would be him, because they seem to be quite good friends with him, and I think they've done training with him in the past.
Yes, I'd imagine the Tasmania Challenge is quite similar to Iron Man.
Yeah.
And there were signed memorabilia on the walls for Mark, so it looks like he's been friends with, it was Elliot and Andy. Looks like they've all been good friends for a long time, and there were many pictures of them competing and up to their neck in mud.
Lovely.
All three of them running their hearts out at various venues around the world. So yeah, I'm sure they're very good friends. And it was nice of Mark to come along and have a chat.
Absolutely. So he's not the reason that we were there, but it was brilliant.
Oh, yes.
To find him there. And he did a bit of a talk, a little update on his leg and just some general stuff about fitness.
Okay.
And then after that, he came back for a Q&A with all the different groups.
He had some, I mean, it was interesting to see, because Formula One drivers, they are tiny, aren't they? They're tiny, little, slim people.
Tiny, little people.
I mean, remember when we met Bourdais at Silverstone testing?
I could have crushed him.
He was just nothing. It's all, is it? It's so hard to describe how small a man he is.
Yeah.
He's just tiny. And you'd imagine, you know, he was just one-off and exceptionally small. But no, Mark Webber, nothing to him.
No.
I mean, driver at all there.
Webber in particular, I've always thought he has very skinny legs.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, especially, you can imagine one's been in plaster and is not strong. But he's just amazingly small compared to any normal human being.
But they're not normal, are they? They are exceptional human beings. Now, we have some clips from Mark Webber's talk and from the Q&A session,
yes,
which we would like to share with
should
you.
Should apologise for the sound. The aircon was on and the room was very, very echoey. But do try and listen as best you can, because he has some really good things to say.
This first clip, I'm not sure if we missed the beginning of his conversation or anything, but we would having some troubles with the audio recorder.
Mm-hmm.
So he sort of jumped straight in to talking about his injured leg.
Got a little bit of metal in there as well, which is taking a while for the muscles and tendons, I suppose, to heal around where they did the operation. So that's making it a bit more frustrating for me. But it's going well. Some of you might have read that I'm aiming to still try and be back in the car second week of February. Drove a go-kart yesterday for the first time on ice in Austria, actually, and that was wasn't too bad, but still the bumps are a little bit interesting. So I'm very optimistic that I'll be in the car on the 11th, and young Vettel will be there just in case I run out of steam, and we'll strap the youngster back in the car because I'm getting a bit old to do too many laps. It's going well.
Next up, he was asked why fitness is important to him as a racer.
I learned a lot about fitness when I first joined Mercedes, I suppose. I thought I was fit when I used to run sort of 2 or 3 miles, and that person was about 19, and I went to this camp over in Austria, and I got absolutely hosed by all these European guys, and it was a week of cuddling on my teddy bear at night, and I wasn't too keen on that, so I was absolutely determined to make sure it would never happen to me again. A, the suffering, and B, obviously the competitive instincts took a bit of a hit that weekend, from then on, I've taken it very, very seriously, surrounded myself with people that know the subject very well, like these guys, or people that Andy and I have worked with in the past, and all the experience that we've gained together and collectively over the years, I've put that into my own training. So it's very, very important for me to do my job, because we race obviously in very extreme conditions, whether it's temperature, whether it's the duration of the event, the concentration involved. So a fit body, a conditioned body, helps me do my job better, there's no question about it.
Obviously, given the title of the event, Fit to Race, and the fact that the whole day was about being fit, obviously all the questions were about that too.
Yep.
So next he was asked, what does it do for your confidence knowing you are fit?
It's a huge thing for me to know I'm going to races having done the preparation. And you get so exposed, obviously, if you're not in good shape, especially obviously at the higher level of motorsport. Obviously, if you're starting to suffer a bit at any stage, then it's very, very clear for them to see that there's been a bit of a degradation in the driver's performance. So that's, again, not very nice to be on the receiving end of that. But it's also nice if you can see someone else that it is suffering in the race potentially. So it's a big thing, the confidence as well, just to make sure you've done all the work. As Muhammad Ali used to say, do all the work when the lights aren't on you. And then when the lights are on you, then you have nothing to worry about.
Back onto the subject of racing next, Mark was asked, what was his toughest race of all time?
Probably the toughest race I've done is probably the Hungarian Grand Prix, my first year in Minardi. The car didn't have power steering that year, and it was a very, very long Grand Prix, 77 laps. It was about 37 degrees, and I didn't fit in the car that well. So that was one of my toughest hour and 50s of my life, but I managed to get the car home and so that was very, very difficult. Mentally, probably the hardest race I did was the Monte Carlo Grand Prix last year. A wet Grand Prix at Monaco is always very, very difficult. It's the first time I've done it. It actually went to the 2-hour duration instead of the normal traditional 7-hour laps at Monaco. It was cut short of 75 laps. But to drive around there with intermediates and slicks and or groove tyres in greasy conditions, you do not get a second chance.
Mark Webber's ex-teammate came up in conversation next as Mark discusses meeting up with David Coulthard.
It's actually funny, I caught up with David Coulthard yesterday in DC. He said he's done zero training since he stopped in Brazil. He said, man, just carrying like the luggage around there. He said, things are changing for me. He said, I'm starting to get out of breath really quick. And he said, bloody, you know, because he used to train like a maniac. Now he's done zero. And he said, little chores are starting to become a bit more of an issue. So he said, I've got to get back into it.
Oh, I can't believe it happens that quickly.
How?
Just a few months.
How do you go from all that training to no training at all, just like flicking a switch?
Easy.
Really?
Yeah, like you said.
Wouldn't your body shut down?
Well, you're supposed to have 80-20 healthy. Just right. Switch it. Flip it around.
You'd think there'd almost be a point when you had to wind it down and
lots
slow
of
it
cakes.
Down.
It's easy.
You just stop. I mean, you stop racing and that's it. You get
Doritos.
Out of the car and you pick up the Doritos.
Yep.
I don't know how the human body can cope with that kind of turnaround after so many years of training. I'm amazed Coulthard can do that.
That was the last little anecdote that Mark did before questions were taken from the floor. And obviously, the first question that everyone wants to know about is more details about his injury.
Absolutely. It was the only question on everybody's lips. Is he going to be okay? Is he going to be ready for Melbourne?
I also had a fractured shoulder as well, so I was very wasn't very mobile, and it was more just for the circulation of the leg, really, to get that going. So it's changed massively. Still has had a huge modification in terms of I'm rehabilitating the body. I'm not topping up on my conditioning, which I hope to do in the last sort of two weeks going into Melbourne. And I still won't be obviously as fit as I was at the last Grand Prix next year going into Melbourne. I hope I can do that sort of by about the third or fourth, fifth race, getting close to those sort of levels. But it's been more trying to rebuild this and some of the conditioning I have done. For example, I've got an oxygen and an altitude mask at home, which I've been training with. It simulates me being at high altitude, so much harder to work at a low wattage on the bike, which is less power on the bike, but I'm having to work the system a lot harder cardiovascularly, so small things like that.
So that's good. He seems pretty positive. That's what we've been hearing in the news, and now we heard it from the horse's mouth, so to speak.
Yeah. The interesting question was a follow-up question to that. Basically, who gets to make the final decision? Is it down to Mark? Is it down to the team? Is it the FIA thing? Where is the line drawn, and who gets to make that choice?
Great question, because, pretty much me. You know, because at a test, between you and the team. So,
Head injuries.
If you obviously suffer any concussion of any sort, obviously then you've got they'll do a test with you, which all the drivers take this test at random stages during the season to make sure that everything's still, if there's anything still between the ears, because obviously it's not a huge amount. they've got a test which they do to make sure that we're still making a similar sort of decision that we would have made, pre the shunt. There is apparently a test. We've heard they might be putting me under a bit of a test before Melbourne, which could be tricky. But obviously, it's like jumping off a box with one leg.
Do you get a chance to do a full race practice?
Yeah.
So if you do,
I'll do that at the last test. Yeah, and that will be our argument. Obviously, if I can do that. Then.
It's going to be the vibration now, I would have thought.
Yeah, I drove a go-kart yesterday, as I said before. Yeah, the vibration. Yeah. But also the loading. I mean, we really use our heels a lot, obviously, to anchor ourselves into the car, you know, and use that as a point of leverage, you know, to give ourselves...
They're worried about you getting out of the cockpit speed.
Yeah, well, we've got to get out of the car in a set time. So there's a few little bridges to cross. All at Melbourne, nothing in testing. So it's all at Melbourne. And they're going to be brave people to not let me race in Australia. Some hotel numbers.
It hadn't occurred to me, actually, because you think, well, the FIA, you have to do a medical, don't you? But for testing, obviously the FIA don't care about that.
We were talking about this on the site recently, how dangerous it is. And I think it was an Inside Pod chat last week. Basically, testing is unregulated, so you can turn up to testing in an unfit car, and you can also turn up to testing
with a broken leg
as an unfit driver. There's nothing to say that if you feel safe to drive the car, you can drive the car. However, the FIA are going to step in when it comes to racing.
I did like his answer about the test of jumping off a box.
Yes,
because I think he said what he might do is try and sneak in with the other leg strapped up.
Nobody notices. I mean, the thing is, the leg is going to be strong enough, but it's in the head. Will his mind believe?
I wouldn't want to do that.
No, if you know, will you to put all your body weight onto that one leg and believe that it's going to be fine? You've got to be super confident to do that. I couldn't do it either.
Another little teaser that we sent to the site while we were out and about was that we just had a chat with Mark Webber. Mm. Now that might be making it a bit grandiose. I mean,
we spoke to him and he spoke back to us. That's a conversation.
That is a chat, I suppose. So you asked him a question.
I did. It was a question that originally Dank brought up on his blog, and we were discussing it. I mean, I think we brought it up on the show several times. Michael Schumacher had an injury at Silverstone. Literally, it was just over the way from where we were situated in the Porsche building. It was the end of Hangar Straight. He went straight into the corner and he broke a leg. And the question we've been asking is, in similar situation, will Mark Webber recover quicker than Michael Schumacher? The race is on. So, you know, we had to put that question to Mark, and here's his answer.
Pretty similar, actually. Michael's wasn't a compound, so the bone stayed in there, so he didn't have any sort of bigger wounds to deal with, obviously, because you lose a lot of... I lose, with that injury, you lose about two to 2.5 weeks with just basically control the infection. You can't. That's why you can't do it. Even the sweat, obviously, you want to, don't want to build any sweat up on the skin, because so when you've got no the bone's not coming out. You know, I've done a bit of research into Michael's and actually spoke to one of the guys that did some work with him. Yeah, and he was back in the car at 11 weeks, which is 2 weeks from where I am now. And that's exactly what I'm going to be aiming to do as well, having lost that 2 weeks probably at the start. So similar type of fractures, but slightly different recovery time, but pretty similar.
What you're saying is that you're about 2 weeks faster than Schumer?
No. No, he did a Grand Prix on any testing, so he went straight into a Grand Prix, yeah. He tried to drive the car at this period. He tried to drive the car at 8.5, 9 weeks, and the vibration killed him.
Right.
He couldn't drive it. He did a secret test at Mugello.
I can't believe someone coughed or sneezed in the payoff. That was the whole point.
Inconsiderate. You could see, I mean, Mark knew exactly what I was asking. He knew exactly what I wanted to hear. And in the end, he was just too kind and too generous to Michael.
Yeah.
But, you know, the line you wanted him to say absolutely was, I'm much fitter than Michael Schumacher, and I'm better than him. I'm going to recover quicker than him. And just
a bit diplomatic.
Didn't want to give it to us.
It is fair, though, because, I mean, he said about the 2 weeks. His injury is possibly 2 weeks worse.
Yes.
But then Michael did go straight into a Grand Prix.
He did. And, you know, he did really well in that Grand Prix as well. If I recall, he came back and he let Eddie Irvine. He was rear gunner to Eddie Irvine. He let the man win the race. He never broke a sweat. He never thought for 1 second, you know, he wasn't up for it. And no question about it, the guy was super fit. I just wish Mike Webber, you know, no one was listening. No one was ever going to find out.
Oh, like we weren't going to broadcast it to the world.
We weren't recording. I don't know what you're talking about.
So that's pretty much it for our great day out.
Mm.
We met lots of lovely people.
Wonderful people. We haven't mentioned, was it Sarah from the BRDC?
Sarah Franklin.
Yeah,
yes.
She was lovely. Hopefully we can get her on the show in the future.
Yep.
We're talking to some other people about all sorts of interesting things. And with any luck, at some point down the road, we'll find time to fit in more conversation with more people. It was a great, great day. I loved every single minute of it. Worth every penny.
The one problem with that day out is lots of people gave us their business cards and we didn't have any to give back.
We're not geared up, are we? We're not professional.
The thing we kept saying, we're not that professional.
We don't know what we're doing.
It's terrible.
We've got to get a business card sorted. And if it's on again, I'd love to go again. It was £35, but it was £35 very well spent. Lovely company.
I would like to go to ones that are more detailed, because we saw an overview of everything. So I would like to go and learn more about that machine
right.
that is going to take over the world, because it knows everything about you.
It does.
And I'd like to go more and find out about the sports psychology thing. I don't want to know about the food or the exercise.
Oh, you do, though.
No.
You do. You want to know what you're doing wrong. You want to be a racer. If you're in that league, I mean, I don't know if there are any racing up-and-coming racing drivers who listen to Sci Podcast, but you can do a lot worse than checking out the Porsche Centre. They used to be based in Weymouth, apparently, and now they've moved. So it's possible that people know of them in a different location. They've only been there since the middle of last year. They opened, as I said, around the time of the Silverstone Grand Prix. It's absolutely worth checking out. It was a great open day. The group thing that you can do, that's open to anybody. So you don't have to be a racing driver, but you do need a certain amount of money to take part. So you need to be a competitive athlete or a well-off person. A well-off person if you're not. It is a lot of money they're talking about, but it's lovely facilities. And what a day.